Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. New York was down about 1% for the week. Ross checks out the action in crude and the U.S. dollar. InsideTrackTrading.com CEO Eric Haddock looks at the cycles affecting the stock markets, the U.S. dollar, interest rates, cryptocurrencies, oil, and even world conflicts. The founder of Armstrong Economics, Martin Armstrong, gives us his views on energy, the Russia-Ukrainian conflict, cryptos, the possibility of a U.S. civil war, and the real estate crash. He also discusses his new book, The Plot to Seize Russia, The Untold History. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on Twitter at ChartsByRoss. Welcome back to the show, Ross.
Good to be with you, Jim.
Ross, how would you describe this week on the stock markets?
Just more of a bit of a thrashing back and forth. No big directions. I mean, the percentage moves on the week, I think we're down less than 1% on most of the indices when you take a look at them. Bit of volatility on Friday, but a lot of option expirations going on. So market just within the day, big volatility. But overall, the week itself for the equities on the quieter side. A week ago, saw some extremes out there in terms of the rally in the precious metals and the decline in the U.S. dollar. So those a week ago had the type of signals that we would look for that indicate that some reversals are ready. So gold market, which attacked on a really nice move, has settled back down at this point, and that's what we would expect. Had that good outside reversal week down here 2 weeks ago, and tacked on that nice rally. Typically, when we get as overbought as we did into a week ago, you'll see a 1 to 4 day correction. We had some sequential sell signals at the top of the run. Expect a bit of a pullback there. And we got same signals in silver. We got the same thing in copper. Everything just a little ahead of itself. And taking a look at some of those individual stocks like Freeport or Hudbay or Rio, they all got ahead of themselves and starting to settle back here as well.
What's going on with the U.S. dollar?
U.S. dollar, when we take a look at the bigger picture here, we had our 2 months of sell signals, which is normal as you are topping out on the U.S. dollar. And that's historically going back to the 1970s. And you give back then a Fibonacci 38.2% of the big rally. And that's exactly what we've seen here. The dollar index has, topped out there in the 115 level, and then corrected back down to 105 and change. That was just right on the money with that 38% retracement from the bottom in May of 2021. So good oversold against the moving averages, and a sequential buy signal there actually on the bottom day of the correction. And we've rallied back from 105 and change to 107. I think you've got a pretty good chance of testing 109 on this bounce here. But the dollar is probably then sets up to go into a consolidation phase. And the other side of the coin, the Canadian dollar relative to the U.S., just the opposite. It peaked out the early part of this week, up around 75.5, and starting to settle back down. And I think most of that on Thursday and Friday was part of what was going on over in the crude oil market. So crude had a pretty rough week here. The we had been just a week and a half ago up into the $93 range. That was up against both some moving averages that we've got. It's a Bollinger Band, it was just the optimum level to be a seller. And by Friday of this week, we traded down to 78 and change. And that's a retest of the September low. It's a test of the Bollinger Band down here. And this is a pretty critical level on the modeling that we've got on crude oil. There's a 10-year pattern that shows up pretty consistently. This is the fourth time round now. The test of this support right here is right in line with that pattern. If it holds, then the oil stocks, which have been doing holding up exceptionally well, they will probably move back to new highs on not so much on the year, but new highs above what we saw in the last few weeks here. If though the oil market manages to gain some downside momentum and closes below those September lows, I think you could end up with some pretty big margin selling. And targets on the downside would be as much as $60 for in terms of round numbers there.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
Pleasure to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. Find him on Twitter at chartsbyross. Coming up, Eric Haddock next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Eric Haddock, CEO and President of InsideTrackTrading.com. He's speaking to us from Central California. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Jim.
How are things at InsideTrack and how can people sign up?
Well, things at InsideTrack are going pretty well. We can't complain. And the best way for people to find out more information, see some samples, get information on our various subscriptions is going to our primary website at InsideTrackTrading.com. And that's the inside with the extra I in the middle. So it's InsideTrackTrading, tracktrading.com.
Eric, could the Dow have put in a major double bottom during late September and early to mid-October?
Well, I definitely think that it is a multi-month bottom. And as we were heading into that time frame, I was explaining why I thought that we would see the largest rally of 2022 follow a late September, early October bottom, and why the Dow in particular should head back up to its mid-August highs around 34,400 in that general area. And it's a lot of technical indicators, the wave structure. And one thing in particular, when you have a market like stock indexes and they've traced out a pretty clear five-wave decline from either the early November or the early January peaks, depending on which index you're talking about, as that decline is unfolding, and you get your initial decline, first rebound, then a second decline, which is actually the third wave out of a five-wave structure. Then you get a second rebound, which was that mid-June to mid-August rally. That is the fourth wave in that overall five-wave structure. And that becomes a key pivot point, target point, and ultimately resistance point for the future after the market has seen one more decline, dropped the new lows, and set in a bottom. That previous high becomes a critical target and, as I said, a critical resistance zone as well. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One is that it's almost like a testing the resolve of a market, that after it has seen that final blow off to the downside, now the market tends to gravitate back up to where it had found some equilibrium in the past to kind of see if it can breach those highs. Very often it doesn't when you've seen something like that, and that's also the ideal point for a new decline to take hold once that level has been tested. So from a price perspective, even when the Dow was bottoming there on October 13th and then again on October 20th, our work generated a couple of buy signals, 2 to 4 week and 1 to 2 month buy signals. And the ultimate target for the Dow was to get up to 34,200 to 34,600. So those buy signals are still in effect, and the Dow's getting closer to that level, but that's going to be the real critical and decisive point is when the Dow gets up to those levels and what it does there.
Are the cycles a good guide for how long the Dow could move higher and how high it could go?
Cycles provide a tool and a factor to incorporate into that analysis, but I would never conclude or encourage traders to look at only cycles, because they're a general measure, they're a broad measure of the market movement, and unless you're trading from a really broad perspective and have deep pockets and wide risk tolerance levels. Otherwise, you want something more precise, something that encourages better money management. And so there's a lot of things that, for me, cycles are the starting point. They kind of lay the backdrop, they build the foundation, and then other indicators in a hierarchy are what you should implement to start to fine-tune those expectations. With something like the Dow, there are a pair of intermediate cycles that I'm watching, one in early December and then another in early January. Both of them I expect to be multi-week, potentially multi-month highs, but the price action leading into that first one in early December should start to give some indication as to whether the subsequent one in early January is more likely to be higher than that early December one, about the same level as it, or a lower high, that a top is already in place and the market's starting to enter a new bound wave. So the cycles give some indication, especially for potential turning points, but they're certainly not the do-all and end-all or the holy grail of determining market action and trends and really rational and good trading strategies to approach those markets with.
How is the U.S. dollar cycle looking short to medium term?
Well, I keep viewing it in the broader perspective and the wider trends and cycles, and I've been saying this since early 2021 that the dollar was due for a final multi-year rally from early 2021 into the first quarter or second quarter of 2023, and that is the inverse of what we were just talking about with the Dow and with stock indexes as far as a wave structure. On a multi-year basis, the dollar at that early 2021 low was setting the fourth wave bottom. It had rallied from 2008, rallied for about a year plus. Then it corrected into 2011, set a secondary low there, which was the wave two bottom. Then it saw a major advance from there, the wave three. Then the correction into the early 2021 low, that was the wave four. And looking out in the coming years, that will be a downside target and a major support level, but that's at least a few years down the road. But then the dollar entered a fifth wave advance, which told me right from the start it needed to exceed it 2016 to 2020 highs, the pair of highs that were set in the second half of the last decade, and that it should go up to higher levels than that, but proportional to the previous two rallies. And so the dollar has initially attacked a very critical upside target around 113 in the dollar index. But there's a final extreme upside target at 117 to 119 that could still be attacked early next year. Taking that down to more intermediate and short-term, like you were saying, the dollar gave some good sell signals last month, and it's been declining with an initial downside target around 104, but the potential to get down to 102.5 in the dollar index. So it has certainly expended a good portion of that downside energy, but I think there's still some more to go before a bottom is seen.
The 40-year interest rate cycle, when interest rates are in a rising cycle, do they tend to go straight up or stair-step up? And what do you see ahead for interest rates?
Well, if you're talking about a cycle that large, then yeah, it would certainly be in a stair-step fashion. But a more practical cycle in bonds and in interest rates has been this four-year cycle that I keep talking about. And that has governed them since really the mid to late 80s. There has just been a very consistent four-year cycle. And the last interest rate low and bond peak in that four-year cycle was in July 2020. I think there will be a future one in the third quarter of 2024, which would be a secondary high in bonds and a secondary low in interest rates. But that doesn't mean that the interest rate uptrend is done yet. In fact, it's more likely that it stretches into 2023 before then entering what might be a 12-month, maybe a 12 to 18-month reaction lower in interest rates. So that four-year cycle, even within that, you see, I guess, what you would call a stair step, and really you could also equate that to the wave structure that I've been discussing. When you have that initial rally in interest rates, then a pullback, that's the first and second wave, then you see what's usually the more dynamic wave is that second rally, which is the third wave within an overall five-wave structure. That usually is the more accelerated move, often has the highest magnitude advance, then you see another pullback, so it definitely mimics a stair-step fashion, but knowing when those stairs are coming to the next floor or plateau is one of the key things. And interest rates are kind of in that structure where they're starting to create some toppy formations, but that doesn't preclude a final high from occurring before a 1 to 2 year top is in place.
In general, how long are bull real estate market cycles versus bear real estate market cycles?
Well, you've seen them, you know, kind of dovetail with both economic, stock market, and interest rate cycles. I don't know specifically how long they are in contrast, and I would more take the cues from interest rate cycles, from inflation cycles, even things like dollar cycles have some impact, but it's not a direct one-to-one correlation. It's often a lag type of thing between those indicators and real estate, since turning real estate cycles and prices is kind of like reversing an aircraft carrier, that you can, some things start to put into reverse, but that doesn't mean that the forward momentum is stopped right away either. It takes some time to slow it down, to bring it to a halt, and then start to pick up momentum in the opposite direction. So you have some correlations there to those other cycles and those other trends, but also with a pretty good lag usually.
Should we be concerned about the war cycle now?
Well, I still contend that from late 2021 to late 2025, there's definitely concerns with a war cycle. And that's an 80-year cycle that I documented back for, I think I did it back to about the 1200s in Europe and even the East, Far East, but then moving to North America and the U.S. involvement in wars. It's been a very consistent cycle, and it's also very almost a common sense, or if you critically think about it, that, you know, that's kind of the time frame when one generation can pass and the lessons of true serious war begin to get lost on future generations. There's a lot of other reasons that you could attribute to that as well, but it's a very natural cycle, and it's two multiples of a 40-year cycle, where you'll often see smaller incremental events at that midpoint 40-year cycle, but on a much broader cycle, the 80-year cycle is the one that has really timed major wars and kind of global shaping events. And we are in that time frame. I probably spent a decade discussing that and warning it and focusing on late 2021 to really kick that in. And sure enough, it was right at the end of 2021 when Russia started mounting troops on Ukraine's border and things started to kick in. But I don't think that that's the only potential conflict we have on the horizon, and I think everything is setting up almost perfectly, maybe not the best word, but kind of like perfect storm, where China is concerned, China versus the West, and even I think there's things in the Middle East to be concerned about over the next 1 to 2 years. So I think the war cycle is definitely something to be very attuned to and watching for indications of the next shoe getting ready to drop.
Yeah, Eric, I remember talking to you a couple of years ago and you said, well, the 80-year war cycle, 2022 is not looking good. and there was really nothing on the horizon at the time, but you said there will be, and here we are.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it's just the first shoe, and I think adversaries both towards the West and the West looking at our adversaries, you kind of view things like Russia, Ukraine, that there's a lot of attention being paid to how each side is responding to that and how far they're willing to go and not willing to go on behalf of other nations. And that's giving very important clues. You know, when China keeps talking about Taiwan and making more and more assertive moves in the South China Sea, they're watching how the U.S. responds to things like Russia, Ukraine, to start to gauge what they might anticipate if they start to get more assertive with Taiwan. And so there's kind of a domino effect there that I think can easily be anticipated.
What does gold tend to do in times of high inflation, and where is gold in its cycle?
Gold in high inflation, it's one of those things where you always have to be looking at a chicken and the egg syndrome, or the horse and the cart type of thing, where sometimes gold will be surging along with other inflationary things before something like the interest rate cycle kicks in. But many times, and we've kind of seen it this time as well, that gold already had its bull cycle from late 2015 into late 2020, and that was setting the stage for some inflationary types of things, because when you're pricing gold, you're pricing it in U.S. dollars, at least for the price of gold that I'm looking at and analyzing. Obviously, it can be priced in a lot of different currencies depending on where you are, but if gold is rallying for 5 to 6 years basis the dollar, even if the dollar index is going up during that time, that's the dollar versus a basket of other fiat currency. Versus gold, it's more hard versus fiat currency. And so that 5 to 6 year uptrend in gold is showing you that the dollar and fiat currency at large is losing some of its buying power and value. And that's the type of thing that leads to inflation. As those currencies become lower in value, then just by default, the cost of everything purchased in those currencies is bound to go up. And so you have gold leading this inflationary cycle. And then as it's peaking and kind of going into an accelerated blow-off top, that's just when you saw so many other commodities and even oil, which is a commodity too, but distinguished a little bit from a lot of the other commodities, they all really started to enter more confirmed uptrends, and that just had that domino effect to everything else in the economy, with prices just going up and up and up. But you then see the interest rate reaction, and kind of again with that aircraft carrier analogy, that those initial interest rate hikes aren't going to stop inflation right away. They're going to just hopefully, the hope from Jerome Powell and the Fed's approach is, or their perspective is, that it'll start to slow that rate rise of inflation, then eventually help it peak and cap it, and then start to turn it down. But gold has already been through its bull market, so now it is more focused on these higher interest rates, which increase carrying costs, and therefore are a little bit more bearish for gold. So you get a little bit of a counterintuitive or counter-trend reaction in gold, but actually that too is just a very common sense action-reaction, cause-and-effect type of movement in gold. So it's, in one respect, it's leading the whole inflationary cycle, and then it's lagging as far as the gains we're seeing now. I still contend that there could be a second inflationary cycle in a couple of years, but there's a lot more to unfold before we get there, in my view.
Is the collapse of FTX a black swan event for the crypto cycle?
I actually think it's more almost the polar opposite, that, you know, black swan, something completely surprising, shocking, comes out of nowhere. FTX is so well telegraphed and choreographed as the value of Bitcoin and other cryptos plunged for 9-10 months, and that's the, you know, primary value of what FTX and others are holding, mining, interacting with, When that value drops 70%+, it's almost telegraphed that there's going to be serious problems and a lot of collateral damage. So I would contend that it's pretty much the exact opposite of a black swan event. It's a, you know, giant yellow and red flag that's been waving on the horizon for months, and finally the stuff hit the fan.
What's the latest on agricultural cycles?
They are, in my view, in a kind of a neutral, corrective, consolidation phase, although on an intermediate basis. I was talking about this specific week of November 14th to the 18th being a higher potential for a spike low in wheat in particular, but also soybeans and corn. So I needed to see some downward movement leading into and during this week if it was going to be a valid cycle low. And we started to get that. So I'm watching the weekly closing price in a lot of these grains and some of the other ag commodities to see if they hold or break key support and trend reversal levels. If they don't, then this could be a fairly significant bottom and start to bring on the onset of a new intermediate rally in those ag commodities.
What's the latest on crude, gasoline, and natural gas?
They flow into that those same cycles in the grains. Not that they're always linked directly, but for the last 3 weeks, I've talked about how I thought crude would most likely set a secondary low within a day before or after November 18th, and it's had just a very consistent intermediate cycle that's been roughly 7 weeks in duration, and the price movement that we saw since the last cycle has given some good indications of what to expect from crude. And so when crude gave some signals about 2 weeks ago that said this November 18th low should be a secondary low, meaning it should be a little bit above the late September bottom, but that could lead to a new intermediate rally into mid-December when there's somewhat higher magnitude cycles and other timing indicators that are portending a more significant peak in crude. So really, from a broader perspective, I think we've already seen a 6 to 12 month top. Whether there's a chance of retesting that, that's going to be more determined by the price action of the next couple weeks. But I think that you will see a top with almost as much significance occur in mid to late December if we set this low right in this time frame that I'm talking about right now. That will give ample time and even certain indicators that are starting to flatten, but they wouldn't turn up unless crude bottoms in here and begins to rally over the coming weeks. As for natural gas, that fulfilled what had been my outlook for a few years, that we would see a major bottom in early 2020 and then a two-year uptrend into the first half of 2022. Natural gas fulfilled that and fulfilled a host of weekly, monthly, and multi-year cycles with its peak earlier this year. And the outlook for that was to see natural gas retrace back down to its fourth wave. Again, that wave and turning point discussion of earlier in our conversation. And that had natural gas targeted for a drop down to around 550. The low that we saw in July, late June and early July, right before its final rally. So again, a market like natural gas saw a pretty clear five-wave advance leading into August, and the previous low that was set in July, late June, early July, the market goes back to that level to see, kind of test the strength there and see, okay, is this going to hold as support, or is it a much higher magnitude top that's in place? I'm looking more for it to hold and natural gas to stay in some consolidation for at least 3 to 6 months, maybe longer, but at the same time, it be in the process of making a secondary bottoming phase and starting a new wave structure that could take it higher a few years from now.
Eric, any other cycles we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
I think that's quite a few of them. Nothing that immediately comes to mind. And as I always try to stress to my readers, the cycles are certainly important and provide value, but they're not a standalone tool, and there's a lot of other things to be watching with all these markets to really hone your approach to them. So there's a lot of technical indicators that are lining up along with the cycles we've discussed, and the coming weeks could be pretty pivotal for some of those cycles.
Eric, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thanks for having me back, Jim.
My guest has been Eric Haddock, CEO and President of InsideTrackTrading.com. Coming up, Martin Armstrong, next on This Week in Money.
Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Martin Armstrong, founder of Armstrong Economics, available online at armstrongeconomics.com. He's speaking to us from Florida. Marty, welcome back to This Week in Money.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Your new large hardcover book is out, The Plot to Seize Russia, The Untold History. What can you tell us about it?
Well, besides actually being in the middle of all this stuff and being solicited to invest $10 billion into these schemes, which I declined to do, I got a hold of all the declassified documents from the Clinton administration. And basically it shows, I think, why Hillary even made up her story that she lost and Putin invaded or interfered in her election. It was basically because she was doing that to Russia back in 2000. The documents show that when the USSR collapsed in 1991, that NATO actually invited Russia to join. And wow. That's why there was a coup against Gorbachev when he was on vacation. And that was followed by Yeltsin standing on the tank and telling the troops, don't fire on your own people, and they didn't. So the coup failed. But then they were going after Yeltsin. They were trying to steal the country. You had the old communists had filed an impeachment motion to get rid of him so they could take over the country and reestablish the USSR. And on the other side, you had the oligarchs who were basically trying to buy Russia, and they were in league with the New York bankers. So, Yeltsin, the documents show, and even, I've got the transcripts of the phone calls between Yeltsin and Clinton, and that's how Putin got in. I mean, all this nonsense that, oh, he was KGB, wants to reestablish USSR, that's all propaganda. And the documents confirm that. Yeltsin, couldn't possibly appoint somebody like that because they were filing an impeachment motion to get rid of him. So all the documents show that he told Clinton, I had to search high and low to find somebody who wasn't a communist and stood between these two groups. And that's why Putin was so popular in Russia. He like had a 75% popularity rating, mainly because I guess you could say sort of like a Russian version of Trump, that he wasn't a politician and he wasn't one of the communists. So he stood between the two groups, and the people were cheering that because they didn't want to go back to communism. And the oligarchs were trying to sell the country to the highest bidder. So it was very interesting, and all the documents more or less confirmed this. And when you really look at what's happening here, they've kept up this propaganda against Putin. And the danger here is they make it sound like he's a madman, this, that, the other thing, and this is all basically still the plot to change, to seize Russia. And they make it sound as though if you remove Putin, everything would be good. And I have very good sources in Russia, and you remove Putin and the communists are right there. And the hardliners are, they're the ones throwing out these threats of nuclear war and et cetera. And, from UK, you had Johnson saying, well, we don't have to count on NATO. We can fire our own nuke and take out Moscow. And, one of them, responded and said, you realize just one of ours is 100 megatons and it takes out your entire island? Honestly, I've been dealing with governments for 40 years, and never before the Biden administration and Trudeau and all these, crazy people and heads of government, everybody before that always thought world peace. Nixon going to China to divide, everybody thought world peace. Here we have everybody seem to be cheering on, nuclear war. I mean, it's just insane. I'm concerned that if you remove Putin and the hardliners really are there, and they want to reestablish the USSR. When one of them came out and threatened nuclear attacks, Putin actually came out and said, hey, we don't want to go in that direction. The Western press is so biased, and they just put it, they're just reporting whatever's coming from, basically the propaganda machine. And Adelaide University down in Australia just published a report that all these pro-Ukrainian comments coming out on everywhere, it's a campaign, and it's been done by bots out of Ukraine. They traced everything off, and they said, these are not legitimate people making comments. This is all orchestrated to create this, image of what Ukraine has been putting out. And I've had employees there in Donetsk as well as in Kiev. And, I mean, the two of them really don't even like to talk to each other, honestly. But, my sources in Ukraine are real, and they're basically saying that Ukraine is losing the war, not winning it. They had 300,000 men that have been injured, and 100,000 are dead. And I think, the whole thing, like, shooting the missiles into Poland, and immediately you have Zelensky saying, see, this is an attack on NATO. NATO has to come in. It's because he's losing the war. He's constantly trying to create World War III. And you have to understand that whole area is such ethnic hatred. that goes back, you know, centuries, really. World War One was created by a Serb killing an Austrian. I mean, they hate them. And the same thing is going on over here. And what the press won't report is Zelensky outlawed Russian being spoken. Nobody can speak it or spoken in formal areas whatsoever. But even worse, the patriarch of the Orthodox is in Moscow. He set up his own in Ukraine and ordered all the Russian churches in the Donbass to report only to Kiev. I mean, it's kind of like the French, seizing the Vatican, you know. The Western press is just not reporting the truth. And, this is not a thing that you really want to play with because they keep pushing this. And we end up with World War III. Simple as that. And my concern is you really do remove Putin and then we're back into the thick of it. Because, there are all, the hardline guys are there and they remember the USSR. Putin basically is the only one who ever criticized Lenin and he called him just a Bolshevik. And the great empire he talked about was that of the Tsars. But everything is always distorted constantly. And this propaganda that, Hillary started, but we also had John McCain. So it's not just Democrats, it's also Republicans. You have Lindsey Graham is also part of it. I mean, the hatred these people have towards Russian is incredible. Even there have been, like Politico, they had put out a report saying that John McCain has always talked against Russia before Putin. He just changes the name, that's all. But there wasn't a Russian he thought that should still be breathing. And every chance he got was always to talk about war against Russia. And, the whole nonsense of you had Obama wanting to go into Syria, that was all because a pipeline they were trying to create through Qatar through Syria to cut off the energy of sales of Russia to Europe. And it was the U.S. that took out the pipeline. I mean, 50% of Russia's GDP is energy. So, I've called this and said, look, when history is written of this period, they're going to call it the climate change war. I mean, this is all about shutting down and destroying the economy of Russia, because 50% of it is all fossil fuel. You see what these people have been doing everywhere. I mean, as soon as Biden came into power, he cut off your pipeline. He's outlawed drilling and fracking and everything possible. And you look at Truss, who was briefly the prime minister, the first thing she did, she said, we're going to reestablish fracking, and then she was completely overthrown, and the next guy comes in, no, we're not. This is an organized international effort, and it's all this climate change that's being used, and they think that they're just really using Ukraine to weaken Russia, and then they think they can walk in and just take it. And the joke in Washington is they're willing to fight to the last, Ukrainian dies on the battlefield. I mean, I feel bad for the Ukrainian people because they're just being used as pawns. That's it. Nobody cares about them. Zelensky doesn't care about his country or anything. All he does is cheer on more war. Henry Kissinger said, just give up the Donbass. They're all Russians there anyhow. And absolutely no way, and he says, if we did that, Russia will come in and take all of Ukraine and take Europe. I mean, that's absurd. There's no evidence of anything like that. Putin's been there for over 20 years. He hasn't made any such effort. But you remove Putin and we're going to have real problems because the rest of them do want to remember the days of Stalin.
Where can people buy The Plot to Seize Russia, The Untold History?
Right now we have a few hundred copies left. They'll be put on our site. Our publisher is doing the second edition. We'll eventually get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, et cetera. I'm not sure how long that's going to take. Probably not until early next year.
Your latest World Economic Conference just took place. How was it, and what were the takeaways from it?
Well, I mean, we used to have three conferences a year. We would do one in Asia, one in Europe, and one here in the United States. And now we're, because of COVID, we're reduced to just Orlando. And so now we do streaming, and our system's able to handle up to like 250,000 people watching around the world. So it's our conferences are where we cover everything. So it's more or less really teaching somebody how to be their own hedge fund manager. We review every country. And when you look at the whole broad picture, then you can see what's different. For example, gold could never go to $10,000 an ounce and nothing else happened. All right. It's all connected. So what you see that, for example, it's been the rise in the Dow, the dollar. It's all because of capital flows. And the more you rattle the sabers in Europe, the more money comes fleeing over here. It's the same thing from World War One and Two. The U.S. was agrarian. About 70% of the people were all farmers back in 1850. In 1896, we were effectively bankrupt, and J.P. Morgan had to lend $100 million to bail out the U.S. Treasury. Then World War One came, and then right after that, New York became the financial capital of the world. By World War II, we ended up with 76% of the entire official world gold reserve. So capital always flees from wherever the event is. And you have, war in Russia that expands because of all this nonsense over Ukraine. And the more money is going to come fleeing over here. And then you have over in Asia, you have, people rattling the sabers about Taiwan. And the same thing there. You've got North Korea shooting missiles over Japan. We're seeing Japanese capital inflows from there. So, I mean, this is why the Dow has bounced. It will probably make one more low going into early next year. And the dollar basically will still be the strongest currency and the last to fall, because as war, builds up in Europe, then nobody wants the euro. So you see the euro, basically in trouble. You see the British pound falling. I mean, you've got financial crises over there. You're seeing the same thing out of Japan. So it's, war basically just sends capital fleeing to wherever war is not. And that's how North America has actually, we were an emerging market before World War One, and that's why we rose to the top of the heap.
Does it look like the Dow put in a double bottom a few weeks ago, and could the Dow be starting a new bull market?
I think it's a little premature just yet. It's just a bounce. If we really should move back down into early, I would say, 2023, and then you can probably see the Dow move back up. But we have to look at this. I mean, there's the major resistance that we see in here, for next week is where we may see a temporary high, is around the 35, 1,400 to 500 area. That's where, your major resistance is, and your support right now is around 33,000 on the Dow. But if we make a high next week, then we'll go back down to retest the support. And then after that, we'll start looking at the Dow, rising, because 2023 does not look good. I mean, it looks like rising civil unrest and confrontations geopolitically.
What does Socrates see ahead for the U.S. dollar short, medium, and long term, and what is Socrates for people who don't know?
Well, Socrates is the only fully functioning artificial intelligence system in the world, actually. It is monitoring every country every market. It writes over 1,000 reports every day on every instrument around the world. And it does all its own forecasting without human intervention. So, the biggest problem in investment and trading is basically ourselves, that we're subject to emotions, and everybody gets bullish as they see market going up, and then as soon as it starts to go down, then everybody turns bearish. We tend to think whatever trend is in motion will stay in motion. That's just human nature, I think. Longer term, we're looking at the dollar going up still, but after 2028, the dollar should start to really decline, and after 2032, we're going to have to look at reestablishing a new form of government, because what we have with these republics have just become so corrupt everywhere, and that they're just not viable. Historically, republics are the worst form of government because a representative can easily be bribed, and that's what, the end game, really. And that's why the Roman Republic collapsed. Caesar, had to cross the Rubicon, and although they said, oh, he's a dictator, that was all the fake news of Cicero. When Caesar crossed the Rubicon, the people cheered. They all opened their gates, and it was the Senate that fled to Asia. Not the people. The people, saw the corruption of the Senate there as just, crazy. I mean, our Julian calendar is because, the high priest would insert leap days. If they didn't want to go to election, they'd tell them to put in a couple of months. It was so corrupt, they would just bribe the priest. So when Caesar crossed the Rubicon, what should have been winter was actually summer.
Could the collapse of FTX be today's MF Global or Lehman?
Yes. I mean, the ramifications have been really serious. It's worse than Lehman or MF Global, because this guy was trying to buy influence, so he's deeply entrenched into the Democratic Party. He was the number two donator during the midterms, donated, I think the only guy to beat him was Soros. He funded all the various different studies to support the COVID lockdowns. Basically everything that you look at as corruption, he was involved in. The New York Times was just going to have a seminar with him, Zuckerberg, Yellen. It's just absurd. I mean, but these guys. I was shocked. I thought maybe first he lost the money in the bond market. When I looked at it, it's just trading. The digital currencies are in a meltdown, and he kept trying to support his own currency, and he. I've never seen somebody lose so much money so fast. It's just nuts, completely nuts.
What are the connections between Ukraine, Russia, FTX, and the Democrat Party?
Basically, he was involved there. He had money from Ukraine. Here they're supposed to be fighting a war and helping their people, and you got Zelensky, handing him money. Zelensky, to me, is one of the most corrupt politicians. Ukraine is notoriously corrupt. I mean, all your scandals with the Biden family all come from Ukraine. Zelensky, the Panama Papers have confirmed that he has stashed, at least $100 million offshore. And he keeps crying, oh, send us more. I wouldn't send any money whatsoever to Ukraine to help the Ukrainian people through the government. If you want to help the people, give it to Red Cross. From everything I get from on the ground over there, they do not get the money. The politicians are corrupt, and they're just stuffing it in their own pocket. And, he was basically giving money to FTX and to the Democratic Party, to keep the money flowing. It's just one huge corrupt scandal.
Could cryptos be turning into the new tulip mania?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Bitcoin and how far it's gone down, it's not, you know, you've gone past a normal correction of even, you know, 20%, 30%, 40%. When you start going down this far, like coming out of the Great Depression, I mean, you're looking at decades before it ever gets back with inflation to ever retest the highs. I've been warning about cryptos because, honestly, the government is in trouble and they're pushing for their own digital currencies. And when they do, they're just going to seize whatever private ones that are out there.
How would that work? Would they give you a certain amount for your crypto, or do they just say your crypto is worthless, you have to use ours?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when the United States basically defaulted on its continental currency, they made a promise which they never, you know, fulfilled, but they basically say, okay, fine, this is what we say it's worth, and you want to swap it for this one, and we'll give you, like, maybe 100 to 1, 200 to 1, who knows. Trust me, the government is not going to give you anything fair value whatsoever.
Are we likely to see volatile markets for the next while?
Yes. 2023 looks to be like the year from chaos, basically. I mean, just look at the U.S. election. I mean, in my entire life, I've never seen an election that took a week to even figure out who won. I mean, that's absurd. But, you know, the whole process has become so corrupt. I mean, my staff could write a computer program and everybody could vote online and we could do it in less than 30 days. What's with all these mail-in, you know, ballots and stuff? I mean, I know people from Canada that receive some. They're not American. I mean, Pennsylvania was caught sending out over 200,000 to people who are not even verified that they're American. This is what you get. I mean, they just have to win at all costs. They don't care. So, you know, I don't see this as working out very well. I think you're going to be looking at higher volatility because these things are attacking the very basic confidence in government. And when you lose that, that's when the volatility goes up.
The World Economic Forum, the U.S. midterms and election fraud, your thoughts?
Basically that, you know, I think the election of 2020 was rigged. And not that I'm supporting, you know, Trump, but, you know, in Brazil, I mean, the same thing. These were people that had to be removed. You had to get Trump out of there, Bolsonaro in Brazil. They have to get rid of Putin. They have to get rid of Xi. If they do this, then they can get their dream of this one world government with the World Economic Forum and the UN would be at the head of it. This is what is basically you're looking at. It's just they have been interfering in elections for quite some time. They interfered in the Scottish election to prevent them from breaking apart. I mean, it's been documented that they went, you know, they rigged elections in Italy, the EU. Then they had the EU court rule that Barcelona was not allowed to have their own election to separate. I mean, it's all about this agenda. And so this, the midterms, the same thing. This is why they stretched it out for a week to count. Stalin is probably the only time person that ever said the truth when it came to elections. He says it doesn't matter who votes. All that matters is the person who counts. So that's it.
Is Russia under the control of the deep state New World Order?
No. Schwab has often put on, always a young world leader. He did that with Putin. Putin never attended any class. He's put all these people on to make himself look like he's more powerful than what he is. But he did not attend any such thing. And Russia is standing firm. And honestly, all I see is war internationally, probably after 2025 or starting there. And we're looking at, you know, Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and maybe even Turkey joining in. This is what's happening. I mean, they want war. The main reason they want war is that our monetary system is collapsing. These people have been borrowing with no intention of ever paying anything back since World War II. And it's reached the point that they can no longer continue this scam, really. That's what the London collapse in the bond market was all about. And then you had Yellen talking about, you know, taking the treasury and should be buying in long-term debt and swapping it for short-term. Because you've had interest rates at zero or negative for so long that there, any bond that's been issued since 2014 at least is losing money. As you raise interest rates, a third of the national debts around the world, in some cases more, are all losing money. That was the crisis in the UK, that, you know, the pension funds, insurance companies said, hey, we can't take this anymore. And so suddenly the long-term bonds were collapsing. And that's why Yellen came out and said, oh, wow, you know, we have to do something and reduce the long-term and move it all to short-term. Because the banks are the ones that sell the debt. And to be a primary dealer, you have to guarantee to buy a certain amount of debt. And the problem is there's no bid for long-term. Why should I buy long-term when I know interest rates are going to, you know, continue higher? It's a losing bet. So effectively, you end up with no bid on the long end, and that's the real problem.
Is there anything to the theory that Russia went into Ukraine to take out biolabs and other deep state targets?
No, they were just secondary, really. That you have to understand that Russia of the Tsars was right up to the river, to right where Kiev is. So that's why you have Russian-speaking people ethnically in eastern Ukraine. Ukraine never existed before the USSR. They were linked up with Hitler, who promised to create a country for them if they supported him. The Donbass, they're primarily Russian. They speak Russian. They're ethnically Russian. And there was an agreement, the Minsk Agreement, which Zelensky has refused to honor, was brokered by Germany and France, that Donbass was supposed to have an election and allow them to determine their own sovereignty. And as soon as the 2014 revolution took place, the U.S. was there and an interim government was appointed. Not elected, and they instantaneously started the civil war against the Donbass. And if you can Google it, and you'll see that Zelensky was ran on promising to end corruption and to seek peace with Russia, and he's done nothing but the opposite in both cases. You know, the people themselves did not want to see their entire country destroyed for an area that has always been occupied by Russians. I mean, it makes no sense. So this is just a proxy war. So Russia is not part of any deep state or new world order, and they've been resisting it.
Is Russia continuing to buy gold, and what do you see ahead for gold?
Basically, Russia and China have been buying gold. China's also been selling off U.S. debt. And that's really because the dollar is the reserve currency, and they're trying to create an alternative. That's really what we're looking at. The Biden administration and putting the sanctions against Russia was absolutely the worst thing you could possibly do. It divided the world economy, it told China, go ahead and create your chip system because we could take you out of SWIFT at any time. I should point out when Russia went into Crimea, at that time Obama went to SWIFT and wanted to have them removed. And the SWIFT system refused. They said, we do that, you're turning this into politics. And so what they did is they replaced the head of SWIFT in 2019, and now they walk in, take this country out, do this, do this. Yeah, okay, fine. And SWIFT is no longer an international system. They've divided the world economy in half. So this is why they've been looking at gold, not that gold is the savior here. It's just that, you know, they need some sort of alternative to the dollar and to the euro, which they see as, you know, falling off of the cliff. But and once again, if you're going to wage war, you get rid of everybody's assets that are there. You don't support them. And just pay attention, because China has been doing nothing but selling off U.S. debt. And when it's done, okay, fine. You want to go toe-to-toe? Let's go.
Your thoughts on the euro and the eurozone?
Basically, it's doomed. When they were creating the euro, they came to me and they were pitching, oh, you join the euro, everybody will pay the same interest rate, and they were comparing it to the dollar. And I told them this is not going to work. You have to consolidate the debt. But Germany was against that. And they said to me that they just had to create the euro and they'll worry about the consolidating the debts later. And of course, they never did. And all you did was transfer the volatility of individual currencies to the bond market. And now they complain that, oh, that's not fair. He's paying 2% more than I am, etc. And I warned them this is what was going to happen. Fine, we have a dollar and a single interest rate, but that's federally. All right, we got 50 states, and they all pay different interest rates according to their local economies and their credit ratings. So basically, that's it. I mean, I don't see the eurozone will end up breaking apart. You're already starting to see, you know, conflicts. Macron came out and said that if NATO responds nuclear, he will not participate against Russia. It's just, you know, we're getting a division everywhere. So I don't see the eurozone lasting, and they can't keep it together with threats and intimidation. So that's basically what we see going forward.
Was Britain right to pull out of the eurozone?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no, like I said, the eurozone was never created correctly. They were telling everybody it was going to compete with the dollar, but it can't unless there is a federal debt. Every bank had to be politically correct and own some piece of the debt of each state. I mean, that was defeating the very idea of a eurozone.
Would places like Italy and Greece that rely on tourism be better off if they had their own currencies so they could be a more budget-conscious place for you to go holiday?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have completely different economies everywhere. In Germany, you've got the Greens up there that are so insane that they want to end nuclear power as well. I mean, Germany is the backbone of the eurozone, industrial. It needs fossil fuels. How are you going to make steel and everything else? I mean, it was made with coal. I mean, not electricity. And you don't have a power grid big enough. And they're so green, they don't even want nuclear power, which is probably the cleanest solution. So they're undermining the German economy, and they're, with Germany going, there goes the eurozone.
What does Socrates see ahead for crude?
Well, basically, we see more turmoil when you're looking at the natural gas side. Our biggest crisis right now is the collapse in the production of diesel fuel. And people don't realize that, and I think these climate zealots are so against diesel, and they're just looking at shipping and trucking. But they don't realize that heating oil for your home is also diesel. They just add different a dye, so it acts different, so it looks different. That's all. So, I mean, these people are an agenda, and all they care about is destroying our ability to create fossil fuels, and they don't care the fact that, you know, people are going to die freezing to death without fossil fuels. I mean, to even heat their homes. And, you know, they just push it aside and say, well, you know, there are alternatives, wind and solar, and that's very nice. But when, you know, I've been to Germany many times, and the one airport I've been snowed in has been Frankfurt. I mean, snowed in to the point that it's 6 feet and you can't even leave the terminal. So that's not, you know, going to help. You got all of these solar panels and everything else, and when the windmills freeze up, what are you going to do? No nuclear power? I'm not very optimistic of the future this way. But, you know, these people are so anti-fossil fuels that they don't care. And every study I've seen, the most conservative is that the power grid has to be four times the size it is right now just to support electric cars.
The Republicans just listed off numerous crimes they're investigating Joe Biden for, including human trafficking. Are people waking up, or could the U.S. be getting close to a civil war?
Well, I think we're, you know, dangerously flirting with civil war to some degree. Civilization is created when everybody benefits. And the left-wing politics, both in your country and in the United States, it's turned into nothing but hateful. It's, you know, what Trudeau did with your truckers, and what you see down here in Hillary calling people that voted for Trump deplorables. I mean, how do you then have a unified country when you're demonizing one half of it? So I don't see the United States as surviving as a single entity. I mean, the worse it gets, you're going to see it. But the hatred between the left and right is monumental. I mean, I honestly, I'm not interested in going to California anymore. I mean, it's just so anti-everything that I believe in. It's just crazy. And you see so many people fleeing. They don't want their kids raised there. It's just become a joke. I mean, I have one friend that, you know, his son was there in I think third grade, and the teacher was talking, well, you know, about maybe sex changes. I mean, what? I mean, you know, it's just insane. It's way too young to start talking about that. I mean, it doesn't even come to play until you get into maybe puberty, but, I mean, I grew up with a kid who ended up being gay, and when we were kids, I mean, he'd want to play maybe with the dolls with the girls and rather than football with us, but we didn't like to say, you know, oh, he's gay or something. We didn't even know what the term meant back then. So it was when, after puberty is when it became more noticeable to him and everybody else. That was all. He was still the same person we grew up with, but, you know, you're demonizing one group against another, and that's exactly what Hitler did. He divided the country so that as long as you have all the groups fighting amongst each other, then they don't band together and go after the government. And you can Google, that all came out. Amazon uses that, diversity index. As long as you have as much diversity in your workforce, then they don't band together to create a union. If they're all white, if they're all black, if they're whatever, then they all talk to each other, they'll band together, and they'll create a union. So they create a diversity index to split up race, creed, color, gender as much as possible, and that way they never get together to form against the company.
From the outside looking in, your thoughts on Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau?
Well, basically, I mean, he's just a Schwab flunky. That's basically it. I mean, he certainly doesn't represent Canada as a whole. You know, it's maybe you could start a betting pool in Las Vegas to see who's worst. Some people say Trudeau is worse because he's actually not senile compared to Biden, or Biden's on Never Never Land. But if you look around the world, we've got the worst crop of politicians, I think, in my entire career. I mean, there's nobody that I would be able to sit down and even have intelligent conversation with over a cup of coffee. They're all a joke. And I think they've been deliberately, put in place so they could pull off this agenda from the WEF.
If precious metals are going to move higher, is the Canadian dollar a good place to be?
The main currency would still be the U.S. dollar. But if you notice just in the last couple of weeks as we go into next week, gold has bounced as well as the Dow. You get these people that say, oh, the gold up and everything else crashes. And that's not true. Gold will rise when the confidence in government declines. And that's what we're dealing with. But when the confidence in government declines, then people move their money away from public assets into anything tangible. And that's been real estate, stock market, collectibles, precious metals. So everybody has a different, perspective, but if there's a common thread between it all, and that is they don't trust government.
Does Socrates see any panic cycles on the horizon?
Generally next year. I mean, we have a panic cycle even in the precious metals in 2023. So next year is going to be, like I said, for me, the year from chaos.
How bad does Socrates think the real estate crash could get?
It's very diverse. You have the low-end market that is impacted by the higher interest rate. And also you have people fleeing. You have a great migration going on. So you have people leaving, California, Seattle, Oregon, New York, Chicago area. They're leaving the places that were typically the most draconian during COVID. And so many people are moving to Texas, Florida. I can tell you I'm not so thrilled with it because the traffic is at least double. It used to take me an hour and a half to get to Orlando, and now it can be 2.5-3 hours or more. That means the traffic has just been incredible.
What's your feeling about so many governments mandating electric vehicles in the not-too-distant future? There doesn't seem to be much of a transition plan to ease us into it. It took us, 60 years to get away from horses?
This is the whole problem with these people. I've been dealing with governments, as you know, for really a long time, for 40-some years. And the one thing I can tell you is that I'd walk in and say, look, we can't continue to keep borrowing like this. We're going to go bust in 20 years. And the reply would be, yeah, that's fine. Maybe you're right, but I won't be here then. There's nobody in politics that cares anything whatsoever about the future. It's the next election. What do I got to say on TV next week? That's it. There is no long-term planning whatsoever. We're basically on our own. That's it. And I don't see anything, changing. I mean, that's why I say after 2032, we're going to have to come up with a new form of government because republics are the world's worst.
Martin, where can people follow you and buy your new book, The Plot to Seize Russia, The Untold History?
Right now to our website. It should be up there for sale today or tomorrow. And it's armstrongeconomics.com.
Martin, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
It's always a pleasure. Take care.
My guest has been Martin Armstrong, founder of Armstrong Economics, available online at armstrongeconomics.com. He was speaking to us from Florida. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Eric Haddock, and Martin Armstrong. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.